Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming by. My name's Rob Lefferts. I am the Director of Program Management for Enterprise and Security in Windows. If you've seen me around Build before, you might have heard me talking about other things, like the Microsoft Graph or Office 365. But I'm very excited to be here today to talk about my new role and a super exciting revolution that we are working through in how we deliver Windows capabilities to the enterprise, what that means for your users, and what that means for some critical topics such as security and manageability. But what I'd like to start off with is talking a little bit about how we see the world. There is definitely a change around mobile and cloud, around how businesses work, how users experience technology, and in how you can support that. Some of the classic examples, some of the foremost ones, we think of these great revolutionary startups, just like Uber and Airbnb, that have gone ahead and revolutionized whole industries and really changed the way that I think about how do I get a cab or how do I book a hotel room. And the reason they've been able to do that is multifold, but fundamentally there's a nugget there, a core essence around what can they help users do, people getting more kinds of things done, being faster getting it done, and connecting in a more seamless way across all the experiences that they really care about. Now, these are the two of the standouts in what I think of as the classic consumer space, but this is definitely happening across a whole range of industries and impacting some of the very basic experiences like how do I think about air travel? So here's an example from Virgin Atlantic, who's actually gone and built an application taking advantage of Windows Phone that provides a full immersive experience on what's it like to go through Virgin Atlantic first class. And they actually couple it with a band device so that they're measuring the user's responses and actually getting data back, telemetry on when did the user get excited and interested, when were they paying attention, and their heart rate went up. And they're using this to really drive how they craft new experiences and how they connect to a whole new generation of users about what that feels like. But it's not just Virgin Atlantic, it's across a wide range of industries, whether it's wealth management, or dining, or healthcare, or hotels. It's really about making sure that the kinds of experiences people can have are revolutionary and taking advantage of all of the technology changes that we can provide. I'd like to leave you with one thing about this general concept, which is the idea that it's not just for end users, it's not just for end customers. One of the most important transformative experiences that we can deliver is how can we make our own employees more productive? How can we give them that same sense of I'm doing more, I'm doing it faster, and I'm doing it in all of the places where I really need to get work done in a way that makes me feel superhuman? And so we've listened to IT in a wide range of forums, and some of the core things that we hear resonate strongly with this notion of transformation and revolution. The first is that your users want to get more done. They are committing time outside of work hours in order to do work tasks. They are roaming across multiple devices, and they are more and more on the go, mobile, and expecting that kind of seamless, high-fidelity cloud experience driving everything that they get done. The second thing is it's a scarier world. And we'll talk about this a bunch, but the fact of the matter is that attackers and the threats that are facing your organization every day are really growing and transforming at a phenomenal rate. And the technology needs to keep pace with that to make sure that your users are secure, their identities are secure, and that your entire organization's business is kept secure. And finally, all of that needs to happen in a way that really delivers on making it effective for the users, and making it effective for your organization, both in terms of how you manage the technology and very much in terms of how do you manage the costs of the technology. And a lot of this, it takes money to keep a machine up to date. And the fact of the matter is that that's real cost on your organization, whether it's a device that you provide or if it's even a device that the user paid for with their own money and they're bringing it to work, it still costs hundreds of dollars per year to make sure that they can have a great experience working with that device against corporate resources. And when you go to upgrade that infrastructure, we need new ways of thinking about how can those upgraded experiences show up, and how can we make sure that users really get those latest, greatest, cutting-edge experiences. And this is what we hear from you. And this is why we have designed Windows 10, to make sure that it delivers on this digital transformation and can put you at the forefront of making sure that your employees and your users are as productive as possible in the new world. This starts with a notion around core productivity. And a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today is deeply focused on the IT organization. In fact, those pillars around manageability and security. But we want to start and lead in with how can we make the users more productive, both in terms of the experiences that they have and the ways that they interact, but also very much in terms of how can they get and integrate and take advantage of the latest and greatest hardware and devices. Again, that has to be managed in a way that works for the organization and works for the cost structure of the all-up business, while guaranteeing that we are doing the utmost possible to protect against the full range of modern security threats, even as those escalate and get more and more terrifying as time goes by. So let's start off with the user, and let's think about what does it mean for a user to be more productive in today's environment. And actually, a lot of these came across in really great style in the keynote this morning. And so I'm going to go through this so we can get into those meatier IT topics. But it is the essential nugget of why we are here and what we are trying to provide. First, users have a number of ways of interacting with devices. I myself, I'm lucky enough to be a Surface Book user. And I use the pen all the time. I use it when I'm reviewing documents. I use it when I'm in meetings. I find it is a great way to set people at ease that, in fact, I'm not behind the laptop screen typing and doing email. I'm actually engaged with them as they're talking to me, and I'm taking notes about the things that they're saying because it's important and it matters. The improvements that we saw in pen and ink today, along with ongoing improvements in voice and touch, really deliver on this, having whole new ways to interact with the PC and for me as a user to think about how I can be more productive every engagement that I have. But even more than that are the ideas of what about when the PC reaches out to me with interactive assistance like Cortana, and it tells me ahead of time about what is the upcoming meeting and the thing that I need to know and the travel time that maybe I should worry about, and the content that people in the meeting might care about or might not care about. This is critical information where my PC really becomes that trusted participant in how I do my work every day and helps me manage this on-the-go, high-tense flow about lots of things happening and lots of things needing to get done. And I have lots of devices. I talked about my Surface Book. But of course, I've got a phone and a desktop, and I'm moving back and forth across these. And because it's seamlessly connected to the cloud, and because Windows makes it easy to interact with data coming from that cloud, I always have the latest and greatest up-to-date information at my fingertips, regardless of which device I just transitioned between. And the devices that I have work in more than one context. And we've talked about things like Continuum. But again, as a user of a Surface Book, it's really pretty delightful when I get home in the evening to rip the screen off the device, sit down on the couch, and start reading documents in that experience. And the device transitions seamlessly in between working as a tablet and working as a full-fledged laptop. The same kind of idea, carrying a phone that knows how to work like a phone, something that fits in my pocket, and then scale up to a full-on desktop experience with the full richness of PC interaction and able to take advantage of a big screen and full screen real estate. And hardware is cool. It is very sexy. As a user, I love getting the latest and greatest, staying up to date. One of the great things about Windows 10 is we have worked hard to make sure that it will keep your users engaged and productive on the hardware they have today. In fact, the hardware they are using today for Windows 7 will likely perform better than it ever has when you upgrade it to Windows 10. It won't magically become a touchscreen laptop, but it will be faster, and there will be a lower footprint on the device. And this really matters for keeping users productive. The second thing is there's a lot of choice about what kind of device do I want to have and the way that I want to work. And this is not just about the first-party devices that Microsoft delivers. We're having a great conversation with the whole ecosystem about what are all the kinds of form factors that users need. Is it a slate that's just this size that I can easily carry into a meeting but might just fit in my back pocket? Is it something smaller? Is it a flipping convertible device? And this is really a time of great innovation, thinking about how the hardware can really grow and adapt to work with users in all of the ways that they really want to get work done. And that includes specialized devices. So imagine devices that are custom purpose-built for kiosk-like scenarios, or that are ruggedized tablets working for things like, I'm on an oil rig, or I'm on the sidelines of the NFL, and I just need that sense of real confidence and security that when I get checked by a linebacker coming off the game, that my device is not going to break. And we can provide that kind of thing with ruggedized, purpose-built devices. But it's really just the start. And when we think about what productivity means, we really think about whole new, unimagined experiences, like you saw this morning in the keynote with HoloLens, that really can take us to entirely new places. On top of that, there are purpose-built devices like Surface Hub, which I'm lucky enough to use every day. It really changes the way I come into a meeting, I join a Skype conversation, I share content on a whiteboard, the pen works, and everyone, even remote participants, can easily see it. This is a really magical experience that takes advantage of the best of hardware and software working together. So we've talked about making the user much more productive and delivering magical experiences for them. But again, the core of this is that we can do it in a way that really works for the organization. And this requires ongoing investment innovation in how we think about management and how we think about the experiences the user wants to have and the kinds of things that IT can provide for them. The first is there's nothing more difficult, painful for an organization or a user when they're caught up in a regular help desk call about a problem that they could and should be able to solve on their own. It ties up the corporate IT assets. It also ties up that user while they're sitting on the phone. Imagine I want to deploy an application and I'm having trouble finding where do I go get it and how do I install it. We've been doing work with Windows Store for Business such that users can install applications from the corporate catalog that either curates things coming in from the public store or is a set of custom-built applications targeted to that line of business and make it easy for users to install that using the store experience that they know and love and make it easy for them to get going and be productive without having to get on the phone. And now IT can think about how do we solve problems like enabling new business scenarios. The second thing is users really need to stay up to date with the latest and greatest, and we need to deliver that in a way that is seamless and is not a rip and replace experience for the user when their hardware gets upgraded. And so we've been working hard at making sure that in-place upgrades provide that continuity of experience for a user where they don't need a whole new image to get wiped and replaced onto their laptop. That's pretty invasive, both in terms of the time for the user to go to help desk, to turn it in, to get paved, but it's even worse when you think about what it means for the IT organization, where they have to build, configure, and manage an ongoing set of images that keeps up to date with every single release and has to be validated for all of the details, like did we get the VPN configuration correct? Are we doing the right thing with the data on the hard drive? And that's a full test pass. If you can keep the user running with the configuration that they already know works and they trust, and then just upgrade them in place, you've lowered the burden for the user, and you've lowered the cost for the entire organization. And finally, let's talk about whole new deployments. So this is not just about our organization is going to roll out a new release of Windows 10, or we have a new employee that we're looking to onboard. This can happen in all sorts of contexts. Imagine I'm at Build all week long. And even though I'm a trusted and responsible employee and a good guy, let's suppose I left my laptop on the roof of the car or the taxi, and it flew off into traffic and got run over. Now I'm stuck in San Francisco. I'm disconnected from corporate resources, and I need to get some work done. Imagine a wonderful world where I could go to the Microsoft store or get a new third-party piece of hardware, unbox it, and sign in to my AAD account. Just type in robble@microsoft.com, type in my password. It connects to Azure Active Directory. It downloads the configuration and policy that I need to have in order to be productive, and connects me to all of my data living in the cloud. I am, in fact, up and running again, even though I did this boneheaded thing and left my laptop on the car. That's the kind of scenario where users can really continue their productivity and make sure that they are moving forward, and we've changed how that impacts the way that you deliver your own capabilities for your organization. With that, I'd like to transition and talk about some of the scary things that are going on here. The world has changed dramatically, and the kinds of people who are doing scary things, that's actually changed too. It's no longer a world of, there's some kid in a college dorm or sitting in, you know, got home from high school, and they're trying to figure out what kind of cool, fun thing they can do on the internet. It's moved through a world of cyber criminals who are actively out looking to make money, and even into a world of nation-state hackers who are well-funded, well-organized, and very sophisticated, and are really looking to understand how they can get more access to information, and even how they can disrupt certain industries. And so let's think about this quote. It is absolutely the case that Windows is the most secure platform we've ever made. And we are going to do more and more to keep enriching and embracing what does it take for that to get stronger and harder to hack. We'll talk about a bunch of those things today. But it's also, we live in the real world where there are smart, well-funded people looking to break in. And so we have to be realistic about what that means and how we can help your organization stay on top of it. And that's what we're committed to with Windows 10. Because it's not just an issue for IT, and it's not just an issue for end users. It's really something that matters to the business all up. The impact is very real in terms of finances. $3.0 trillion on lost productivity and growth. And that is just a gargantuan number. So think not only about the users who lost their data or who lost their identity. Think about scenarios like ransomware, of which several have been really high profile and in the news, some critical institutions like hospitals, where in fact their own access to their data gets locked up for a number of days where they're trying to deal with this issue. The average cost of one of these incidents is $3.5 million, which again is a mind-blowingly huge number, but just don't think about the dollars. Also think about the impact to brand. Think about what it means when your company's name becomes synonymous with a whole bunch of leaked information that got distributed on the internet. And also think about the fact that that number is going up. This is a 15% year-on-year increase in terms of what is the cost of one of these data breaches for the average organization. And I'm also here to tell you it's not just about the hackers. We've talked a lot about users, and they are very vulnerable to a whole bunch of social engineering and to a whole bunch of, let's call them, mistakes. It turns out that even after your users have left your organization, you think you said goodbye to them, 42% of them, on average, still have access to corporate data in one form or another, whether that account didn't get turned off, or a bunch of stuff got downloaded onto their home machine, or it's sitting on their phone, and they are able to walk around with that information. That's a huge vulnerability in terms of decisions they might make with that data, but also in terms of how likely are they to get hacked in some other way that you may not be thinking of because you are not actively protecting that device. And so one of the things that we think very seriously about is how we can help your organization protect its sensitive corporate data and how we can help the users have a great experience knowing, am I doing the right thing? Am I following the corporate policy? And after they leave the organization, making sure that the right thing will happen to that content. And so I want to invite up Brad McCabe to actually give us a demo of enterprise data protection.
Thank you so much, Rob. Switch over here. So I've got my machine here set up, and this machine is running a build. We've got enterprise data protection enabled on this machine. And what enterprise data protection does is it allows us to separate that user and personal data and still protect the corporate data on the machine. So we can protect that data, we can keep it separated, and we can protect it as it moves around as data tends to do in this modern world. So let's take a look here. This machine looks kind of normal here, but if I come down to the start menu, the first thing you notice is with enterprise data protection, we've turned it on for certain applications. And so you'll notice, for example, my mail and calendar in the upper left, you notice the little badging. I've also turned it on with policy down for the office apps down the bottom. So the users can see what apps are corporate apps, what apps are personal. But as developers, you can also extend this. So you can enlighten your applications with the APIs that are available to also help with a lot of these situations where applications are both for work and personal use. And a great example of that is Microsoft Word. Maybe I've got my machine, and I want to start up Word here. And so I'll go ahead, I'll start it. Looks just like Word. I'll go in here, you know, because it is build. I will type a document, right? Everything looks exactly as you would expect it. Maybe this is a document I'm typing for a college class I'm taking. I can save it, and it's great. Now, if I take, though, and I open a file that has work-related information, I'll go here and I'll open this Contoso sales document. And now you notice if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you notice that same badge icon. So Windows recognized that this file had been protected, it was encrypted, enterprise work data, and it's gone ahead and it's opened it for me. Looks like Word, I can do everything I want to do in Word, but I can tell immediately that this is a work document. In fact, as a user, I could choose to save this, and I could choose how I want to save it. So if I say save a copy of this, you notice we've changed the common file dialog so I can choose to encrypt it or not. As IT, you're fully in control of this. In this scenario, I've allowed my user to determine whether or not they want to encrypt the documents. You could push a policy out that says everything written by Word or anything done in an existing line of business application you've already created needs to be encrypted, no selection, no option for the user. So you're in control of the knobs. You can dial it as you want to. Now, for the user, I'm just going to go ahead since I've already saved this and close out here. The user can see very easily if I open up my documents, you'll notice I've got a collection in here, things like the Contoso doc we were just looking at, and you'll notice things like my Christmas 2014 family newsletter, which is not encrypted. Now, if I left the company, my rights could be revoked. All of those work documents would then be worthless to me. They'd be encrypted garbage since my keys would be revoked. But it's not just about protecting the documents as they move around. It's also sometimes protecting what people do with these documents. So here, you know, we've got the Contoso FY15 projected earnings, highly confidential document. Of course, you can tell that from the picture of people sitting on a park bench. So if I scroll down in my document here, you'll see I've got this earnings summary, and right in the middle here it says, as you see in figure one, an unprecedented increase in TV sales in April has led to a projected increase in full year earnings to 200% above estimates. Now, I'm a good Contoso employee. This is like awesome news. I just don't happen to work in PR. But, you know, I know better than PR, so maybe I just want to go ahead and I want to tweet this information out. So I can come in here. This is a protected document. You see that badge up there. And I'll just go ahead and I'll copy from here. Now I'm going to come over to Twitter here. And we can go ahead and we will do a new tweet. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to paste that information down here. So I'll right click. I'll choose paste. And we get what I like to call the career limiting dialogue box. What it says here is, you're removing Contoso, my Contoso demo company here. You're moving encrypted content to a location where it won't be encrypted anymore. Your organization may track this activity. Your paycheck may cease. So now I get the option. I can say, continue anyway, right? Anyone, by the way, looking for an employee, I might need one. Or I can choose to stay enrolled with the company and I can choose to cancel out here. Now you have the option to control this, right? You could take and you could say absolutely, positively not, I'm gonna push a group policy, no one can copy and paste encrypted content out of the container. Or you can choose a middle ground, which is what I've demoed here, that says, let my user do it, but I wanna track it, I wanna log it, and I wanna report off of it. You can also choose a third state, which actually lets your user do it, doesn't give them any type of prompt, and just tracks it in the background for you to audit it. So a lot of flexibility of how you configure it, a lot of cool scenarios that you can do as a developer to enable this in your applications to help with some of these work-life blurs. So that was a very quick tour, but you can see how we can keep the data separated but still protect it as your users move around and as the data moves around. Back to you, Rob.
Awesome. Thank you very much. So as you can see from that demo, there is a lot to EDP, Enterprise Data Protection as a feature. There is a lot of user experience and infrastructure behind it. So pulling that together really requires some thoughtfulness about the design. I'm here to say that, in fact, we are out in self-host. I live every day in an EDP world, and it is actually part of the Windows Insider's flights that you can get today. This week, we will be publishing the documentation that will tell you how to go and turn it on and try out what would EDP feel like for your organization. It's great that we can protect the data, but in order to really make sure that we are secure, we need to lock down the applications that we're actually going to allow to execute on the device. And we are taking advantage of a functionality called Device Guard that actually makes it possible at a hardware-rooted level to have an enumeration of what apps are trusted, and those are the only applications that we will allow to execute. And this is really appropriate for a bunch of custom scenarios like, again, think about that kiosk PC, or think about task-oriented workers who have a specific and legislated set of apps. Please do this and only this, and we can make it really possible for an IT organization to enumerate what should happen on that device and make sure that nothing else actually happens. And this kind of capability really helps guarantee the experience users will have with that device.
So let's flip over and take a look at this in action here. So I've got a device set up, and you can see I've got a couple of things laid out here. On the right-hand side, you can see I've got my firewall up and running, and you can see I've got Windows Defender, my AV, in this case, up and running. I've also then got a web page on the inside. Now, I could have gotten to this web page in a lot of ways. Maybe this was a phishing attack. Maybe this is just a piece of malicious software on a public site out there that your users have gone out. Doesn't matter how we got here, but I've got this little page, and it looks like it's going to be my Contoso Expense app. And so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to click to download it. Now, unfortunately, this Contoso Expense app isn't really my Contoso Expense application. And I'll go ahead and I'll run this. Come on, click. Be my friend. There you go. So when I run this, I think as a user, all I'm doing is installing a piece of application code from my company or to do something I want. Unfortunately, when we wrote this application, we've done some pretty nefarious things with it. So you can see when I ran it, right, I gave it permission, said, hey, do you want, you know, UAC propped up, said, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Like every user, of course I said yes. Why would I ever not? But especially here because I think it's my app. But you'll notice it's gone ahead and it's actually disabled both my AV, my anti-malware, as well as my firewall. This is my Windows 7 PC. Now the bad guys take and own me in this case. If I switch over, though, I have a Windows 10 machine here running. And you can see, same thing. I've got Defender in the lower right, firewall in the upper right, and my same website here. Now, if I go and I click on download here, or am I sure I want to run it? Sure thing. This time around, though, I get a nice little dialog box here that says, this program was blocked by DeviceGuard because it violates the code integrity policies installed on this system. So that is a nice, pretty way to tell the user, your IT department has required only signed applications or done one of another policy way to enforce DeviceGuard. So you can see that this app that I tried to get and run is blocked. Best of all, you notice that my Windows Firewall and my Windows Defender are still up, still running, and still protecting my system with the same application. Rob?
Thank you. So we've been able to protect the corporate data. We've been able to defend the end user experience. But the backplane around security is around this notion of the user's identity, being able to prove who they are so that you know what they are allowed to do. The problem is that users might not always be on your side in protecting their identity as vigilantly as you would. A recent study showed that 20% of them would actually just sell their passwords for under $1,000. And let's suppose they're not even morally weak, I'll call that, but they're just trying to get work done. 66% of users share their passwords with coworkers, or write them down on pieces of paper, or fail to manage them in all the ways that you would really want them to be careful. They're not always thinking about that, and they're not always doing it. And so this is one of those situations where, in fact, we really need to rethink the technology so that we can deliver a better answer for users that, in some ways, saves them from themselves in these incidents. And that is really about getting rid of passwords as a way for users to log on to the device. We need a better technology. We've talked about Windows Hello, and we've actually released it. And so this notion that a user doesn't log on to their device with their password each and every time, but relies on secure biometrics, really changes the equation. Again, with my Surface Book, it's kind of magical. I sit in a meeting with that thing closed, I open it up, and by the time I get my hands to the keyboard, I am logged in and ready to go on OneNote. In fact, that's the kind of experience that we need to talk about when we think about bringing users forward in this transformation, because they aren't thinking about, oh, I'm being more secure. They're thinking about, I'm having a more delightful user experience, the kind of thing I wasn't able to do before now just happens for me naturally. And so with that, let's actually take a look at a new way on how we are thinking about how can users seamlessly log into their devices.
So how many folks in the room have seen a demo or experienced Windows Hello? Great, because I'm not going to demo that. So we're good. And Brian also did a good job this morning in the keynote. If you noticed, he also showed Hello integrated into Edge. And he was browsing, went to a website, Instead of using his face, he actually used a fingerprint reader to do it there. And you can take advantage, as Terry talked about, of integrating that into your applications as well. But what about all these other devices that people have available to them, right? How can we think about some of those? So we are introducing the Companion Device Framework. And there is a great pre-recorded session that would be available from Anoush about this topic. So if you want to see the code behind this, if you want to really dig in and experience this, there is a great session there you can check out online as part of Build as well. But there's lots of ways to take advantage of this. So people have a lot of different devices, right? So maybe as a second factor, maybe I want to use my phone. But there's other devices out there, and I've brought some of them over with me. So one of them happens to be hanging here on my keychain. This is a little device here from Yubico. And I can actually take and I can insert this into the USB, and if you could see, there's a little tiny button here. I can insert it, and I can go ahead and press this. And so this, using the CDF, can become my second factor login. I could also use something else near and dear to my heart. My Microsoft badge actually has technology from HID, so I could take this and I could tap this to my device as well. I need to remember to put this away so I don't leave it here. So I could take and I could use that. But there's also a lot of other cool devices out there. So I've got a lot of things on my wrist, so I'll take them off here so you can see. One of those, this is the NIMI band here that I have, which is a great security device. I can put it on, can connect up with Bluetooth to my devices. I can do things like my heart rate and look at some of those sensors and such to make sure that I keep wearing this. And so this is another device that you can pick up. But I've actually gone out for this demo, and I've written a little application that's actually running with the band that I have here on my wrist. And so you can see I've got that little app. I've installed it down on this machine. And you can say it says, swipe up or press the space bar to sign in with Microsoft Band. So I've got the app running. Because I'm in range with the Bluetooth connection, it's going to give me this option. I go ahead and I press the space bar, and now I'm logged in. Now you say, well, what happens, Brad, if you happen to be down the hall and someone does that? I get a little alert here on my wrist, so I could choose to lock it if I want, right? So I'll show you that if I press my space bar. Oops, got a little crazy there. Stop it. Oh, now I broke my demo. Well, what you would have seen would have been awesome if I just didn't talk so much and missed the prompt. So I got a little vibration here, a little haptic feedback on my wrist, and I actually got a prompt up that said, do I want to lock my PC? So if I happen to be, say, in the office next to me, right, and someone like Rob comes in, you know, thinking about selling his password, but we got rid of the password, so now he just hits my space bar, I would get that notification right on my wrist. I could hit no and choose to lock it. And once I do that, he would then be locked out. I could walk back to my office since I'm not that far and actually ask him, hey, Rob, what are you doing behind my keyboard there? And have that little conversation. But since I know Rob's not that kind of guy, I'll toss things back to him.
Awesome. Thank you very much. So this notion of using companion devices to authenticate is actually coming with the anniversary update this summer. And so you will be able to try it out with the band and with some of the other cool devices that we have talked about here. But it's not just about the password experience for the user. It's also very much about what happens to that credential. Where does it go live in memory? And what can I, as a hacker, nefarious hacker, do with it afterwards? And it is just the known fact that there are a wide range of tools that hackers can and do use to dump credentials out of memory on machines, to grab tokens and hashes and credentials that they can replay on multiple devices across your network, and that this is a standard way for them to infiltrate. So it's not just about what have we done around the user logging in. It's also very much about how are we managing those credentials in memory once we have captured them so that they can't be reused and replayed in this way. And so we have a technology called Credential Guard that is really all about storing those credentials in a secure and protected place and make it impossible for tools to go ahead and grab them out of that place and then start to attack your network. Let's take a look at that.
So how many of you in the room are familiar with Pass the Hash? And now I'm from Washington, it has nothing to do with marijuana. Or Colorado, if you're from there either. Right? So what Pass the Hash is, looked about a quarter, so let me explain for a second. What Pass the Hash is when I log in, if I can compromise one set of credentials, find 20% of the people, I only need one of them to sell me their password, or have someone else's password, or maybe I get it through phishing or other means. Once I'm into that machine, there are tools that I can use to dump the passwords and the hashes that come along with them. And once I do that, I can start to get into a machine, build up a collection of user IDs and other information, move over to another machine, start attacking that machine with all these different keys, and eventually I can build up a pretty impressive list of user IDs and credentials that I need to move around your network. This is how, in all the different attacks that we see, the bad guys are able to penetrate the network and then move laterally very, very fast. And I'll show you how effective you can be as a hacker, if you really want to be, with my machine here. And so I've got two machines running side by side. On the left, you can see I have a VM running. It's a Windows 7 machine. I've kind of colored that background red so you can keep an eye on it. And on the right-hand side is running native on my Windows 10 on this device, my machine that is running with Credential Guard. And I've colored that one in green. And I'm running a tool on both of these called Minikatz, a favorite tool of hackers everywhere. And I can do a lot of different things. I've already issued some commands to get some privileges here as a hacker would. And I'm going to run this one command to dump some passwords. So I'll start out and I'll run it on the red one. And you see I get a whole lot of information here. But if I scroll to the top, you can see right here in the middle some really scary information. So you can see here I've got Jay Woods' password, or a Jay Woods for the Contoso domain. And Jay Woods tried to be really good. He tried to do can't guess this with a combination of symbols and numbers. But I've now just acquired his username and password. Thank you, Mr. Woods. If I scroll down here, you can see I can see some other information for my demo user. Demo user was not as skillful. They just went with password one. Lots of information I can start to acquire once I'm on this machine. Now, if I come over here to my machine on the other side, which is running Windows 10 with Credential Guard enabled, you see I get a lot of information here. And you'll see that I can still see the users. So in this case, we're down the bottom, so I can see some of the Credential Guard aliases there on the Contoso domain. But you notice that my passwords are coming out as nulls in here. Right? And if I scroll up just to show you some other accounts and such, you notice all of those passwords and information is nulled out in here. So what Credential Guard is doing is it's taking a lot of the security services and the processes, and it's moving them up inside of a hypervisor, inside of a protected space. So as a malicious hacker on the left with Windows 7, I'm able to get in and I'm able to see and dump all of those hashes. Over on the right, on Windows 10 with Credential Guard running, because all that information is up inside of a hypervisor and it's protected away from me, I can't get in to dump that information and access that information. I still have access to the account that I compromised, but I'm not able to run laterally through your network. I'm not able to move around and hit machines until I find administrative permissions. Completely transparent to the user, but moving things to that hypervisor-based security to take and protect us and keep us safe. So with that, I'll toss it back to Rob.
Thanks very much. All right, we have talked about a number of things that we are doing across identity and data and experiences, really targeted to make sure that we keep information safe, users safe, and that Windows 10 is the most secure platform ever. But the fact of the matter is, as I talked about earlier, hackers will find a way to get in. Sometimes that's taking advantage of users, and there really is no way that you can train your way out of that scenario. So here's some recent data. Let's imagine I am an evil hacker. I would like to infiltrate your organization. I'm going to generate a spam email that I will send to 100 people in your company. Sounds pretty straightforward. You're not worried because you've spent a lot of time training your users about what to open and not open. The fact of the matter is, and we've run this and third parties have run this, 23 people are going to go ahead and open that email, even though you've trained them. And they're going to see an attachment, and 11 of them will go ahead and just open that attachment. Because I must need the attachment. Why else would somebody have sent it to me if I didn't need it? And the beauty of this is not only did that happen, it happened quickly. 6 of them will do that within the first hour. And that machine is now owned, and the hackers are trying to infiltrate your network already. And at that point, you are instantly in a how can I detect and how can I respond situation. I want to say one more thing about how difficult this is for the end user. Here is an email sample that's been used. It's a very close facsimile of real emails used in real attacks. And so this is actually from a hacker group that we codenamed Strontium, and we documented on our website. We published reports about this kind of thing. They were attacking embassies and government organizations in Eastern Europe. And they would go and do research on employees of an organization. And so whoever was the recipient of this email would expect to get mails from NATO that would be about the Spanish Army. The email looks clean. There aren't content errors. There aren't spelling mistakes. It's about a thing that this user works on and that they care about. And it includes a URL that actually looks pretty valid. It happens in this case, if you're looking at the fine print, it goes to natoint.com instead of nato.int. And if the user caught that, you were lucky. But if they didn't catch that, then they open that up. A flash attack got downloaded, a kernel exploit got downloaded, the user is owned, and then we're off running Mimikatz to dump credentials and start executing to find other machines in the organization that we can infiltrate. 46% of the time, this happens without malware. So there's no magical signature or detection that could have prevented this from happening. And on top of that, once they are in, it's like bedbugs. They are in to stay. They are infiltrating your organization. They are installing Trojan horses. They are looking for critical IP and dumping that information. They are looking for ways to disrupt your business. And you can see here it's almost 8 months before the average breach is actually even detected, at which point you need to figure out what you're going to do about it. And we are here today to talk about tools to make sure you can detect those behaviors very quickly and have an informed response about what you need to do. We have a new product called Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. We first started talking about this in February, and it is actually specifically designed to help with the case of detecting that something bad happened on one of my Windows 10 devices and helping me as a security professional figure out what am I going to do about it. So with that, I'd like to invite up Heike Ritta, who will actually help demonstrate what ATP looks like.
Thank you, Robert. So first I need to switch. Yes, thank you. So I actually want to walk you through an actual attack and then show you how Windows Defender ATP, Advanced Threat Protection, helps us to detect those attacks and also investigate and understand the breach that happened. So we have a recorded video here. Need to pick it up. So the machine is a Windows 10 machine. It's fully patched, so you can see that Windows Defender is running, and as Rob mentioned, so malware is often not involved, so it's really hard for any anti-malware solution to actually catch those attacks. So the machine is running, it's up to date, and we have, on the one side is the attacker machine, and here is Lisbian. Lisbian, she works in sales, she gets an email from her manager, and about a new custom opportunity. So you can see there's an attachment on it. So you will shortly see on the attacker's machine that something happens, because this attachment leverages a flash exploit. So it downloads or installs and executes a file on the machine. And this is what you see in the next step. She doesn't realize anything, right? So for her, it's like, okay, I have an email, I read it. But on the other side, you can see something happens. So the file got dropped, the file got executed, and then a connection to the attackers opened using PowerShell. So at this point, the machine is completely owned by the attackers, and they can do whatever they want. Actually, that's what they're doing. So the next step, of course, is to gain persistence. So they're dropping another file, and they're editing and registry key to just like start up every time the machine gets rebooted so that they can again come back to the machine. So, and this is like 30 seconds, 40 seconds of an attack, and the attacker is there, is on the machine. He can come back every time he wants. Let's see now how Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection detects this kind of attack. So what is it? Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection is an agent on the Windows 10 box. It's built into Windows 10. It's not doing anything unless you actually onboard to the service. So we then start collecting forensic information from the machine, behavioral sensors, and our cloud analytics in the back end will then correlate all this information and find suspicious behaviors or patterns from that we know they belong to a specific actor group or they look suspicious. So I will open our portal here. So this is the dashboard. The dashboard just shows you, of course, all the alerts that are happening on your in your environment. It will show you some trends and all those information. In our alert queue, we can see there's a, we just need just a second. We can see that a new attack got detected, and it's called NeuroBlaze. That's the name of the actor group. And if I click on it, it will show me all kind of information about recommended actions. I can also click on the actor itself and get more threats, information. But at this point, because it's a quick, short demo here, I just go on the machine where this attack actually got detected. And what I can see is suspicious behaviors like command and control and dropping files and all those things that are usually not happening on user's machine. So if I click on, for instance, the Outlook, on the Outlook executable, here. So we could see in the video, like Outlook dropped a file. So this actually raised an alert, and underneath you can see the behaviors that we collected on the machine. If I click on created a PE file under the user folder, so you can see the entire process tree ending by installing or like dropping this file onto the user folder. So you can get all the little details, and you can also send the file to our detonation service in the cloud to understand what the file is doing. So it's a really, really rich service. And I actually do have a session on Friday, an entire session about this product, and we will walk you through the entire demo and to the complete investigation process, as well as give developers some recommendations how they should probably design their application to not show up as a suspicious activity on the network, because I think you don't want to annoy your security people with not the right code, let's say it that way. Yes, and with that, I think...
Awesome. Thank
yes,
you
Friday
very much.
Morning, so please leave the attendee party early.
Okay, so that is a great new set of tools we are providing to help you be more aware of what's actually going on inside your network and with your users' devices. I mentioned that Windows 10 is the most secure platform we've ever built. And lots of customers believe this. This is actually, Terry talked about this in the keynote. The Department of Defense is moving their organization as fast as they possibly can to Windows 10 for exactly the reasons that we've talked about here. They believe in the security value proposition, and they want to make sure that they are, trust me, you don't get any more worried about security than those guys. They want to make sure that that is the set of end-to-end capabilities they are delivering for their users. Because Windows 10 is really designed to help you, other customers, make sure that you can deliver across all of these pillars so that your end users and employees are more productive, can take advantage of new innovation in hardware and devices, that you can deliver that in an effective way for your organization that is manageable and cost-effective, and that we stay up to date on the latest and greatest cutting-edge technologies to help your users and your organization stay secure. And with that, I'm honestly excited to see what you will go and do with Windows 10. I recommend that you get started piloting and deploying right away. And in fact, sign up for the Windows Insider program, where you can take a look at a bunch of the cool new technologies that we have talked about here and get a real feel for what would this do for my organization and how would it impact our business and how would it help our users. And then finally, let me just repeat the call. Security is a deep, deep topic, and it's a scary topic. And if you'd like to learn a lot more, then there is a session Friday morning where Heike will be going into all the gory details of capabilities from advanced threat protection. Thank you very much for your time, and enjoy the rest of the conference. And please complete an evaluation.